From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We have got a great show for you today. Famed newsman Tom Brokaw will be joining us later. We expect him to reveal the mainstream media's next agenda item after they have succeeded in getting a communist Muslim elected to the presidency. But first, we got an email this week from one Victoria Becker of Kansas City, Missouri. She wanted to let us know that she was inviting a prospective listener named Cammy to her house this weekend just to hear our show. Her message to us was, quote, "Don't be nervous, just go out there, do your show." But we know what she was really saying. Don't screw this up. All right, so this week we are getting our act together. We're going to do this one for Cammy. If you want to help, give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Remember, Cammy is listening. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Erin. I'm calling from Ambler, Pennsylvania.
Hey, Erin. How are things in Ambler?
Ambler, yes.
Where is Ambler?
It's like 45 minutes outside of Philadelphia, and not many people know where it is.
Really? What do you do there?
I am a college student.
Oh, I see. What do you study?
I want to actually become a journalist.
Really?
Ooh.
Oh. Don't you know that? Don't you know that's a dying profession?
Have you considered dental school?
Yes.
I mean, if you want to torture people.
We need to have a little talk, Erin.
Consider buggy whip manufacturer. There's more of a future in it. Well, Erin, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, say hello to a humorist and the man responsible for everything you'll find at Baudette.com, Tom Baudette.
Hello, Erin.
Also say hello to a deputy editor at the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hello, Kiri.
Hi, Erin.
And we are so pleased to welcome back a humorist and the author of the book On the Wealth of Nations, Books That Changed the World, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke is with us.
Hello, P.J.
Hi, Erin. How you doing?
Good.
I don't know. I think I would take all that money you're going to spend in journalism school and invest it in GM stock. They'd probably do better.
Erin, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Of course, Carl Castle is going to recreate three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you win the prize. Carl's voice, your home voicemail. You know the drill. You ready to go?
Of course I am.
Let's do it. Here is your first quote.
I don't know that I would characterize him as awestruck. What he said to me was, it's a really nice office.
That, from a close advisor, was the description of somebody's reaction to seeing his new workplace. So who likes his new digs?
Barack Obama.
Indeed, Barack Obama. Very good. Keeping his campaign promise to meet with unstable world leaders without preconditions. Barack Obama went to the White House, where the first couple graciously welcomed the next couple. Mr. Bush showed Senator Obama around the Oval Office. You know, there's the famous desk. There are the portraits of his personal heroes. And here's the spot where the president traditionally kneels, head bowed, while receiving instructions from the vice president's hologram. The two men talked for an hour without aides present or anyone taking notes, but anonymous sources say that there was some hard bargaining, but that Obama refused the president's offer to get started now on building that basketball court in exchange for a pardon.
I just wonder for a moment, just let me
please
ponder early, whether Barack Obama had that moment that the dog has when it catches the bus.
Yes, now. Now what do you do? Here's your next quote.
Let's see. I had a baby. I did some traveling. I very briefly expanded my wardrobe.
That was somebody reviewing her last year in a speech in front of the Republican Governors Association this week, who decided she wasn't quite ready to leave the public spotlight.
Governor Sarah Palin.
Yes, indeed, Sarah Palin. Now, I want to say, we got some angry emails from listeners after last week's show
saying, "You know, why are you guys still making fun of Sarah Palin? The election's over." To which we say, "We'll stop when she stops." All right? The woman who would not talk to the press during the campaign or wasn't allowed to went on a massive publicity tour this week. She appeared on Fox and CNN twice and the Today Show, as well as going to Florida to headline the governor's conference there. And in a strong indicator she wants to remain in public eye, she got her flute out of storage and auditioned for America's Got Talent. Now, in her various public statements and speeches and appearances, she denied all the scurrilous rumors that have been spread about her by McCain's aide. She said, of course, she knows who's in NAFTA. She said she's got a big old crush on Dale Earnhardt Jr. And she also said that, yes, she was prevented from making a short speech on election night. All she wanted to do, though, she said, was praise John McCain and mention her dress and shoe size in case anybody wanted to send her something for the spring season.
I have a bit of a personal gripe about this whole thing. I lived in Alaska for 23 years, and in the 10 years I haven't, as I've let people know that I'm from Alaska, there's always a certain amount of wonder and you know, admiration that comes to that, like, wow. And I never thought I would miss the stupid, do you live in an igloo questions and now it's like being from Grinders Corners or something. You know, you say, oh yeah, I lived in Alaska for almost 25 years. They go, God, what's up with that place anyway? it's like the magic is completely gone.
Do they take a step backwards?
Oh yeah, they start eyeing
the exits. What is Sarah Palin up to? Is she just trying to rehabilitate her image, which has certainly taken a hit? I can understand her wanting to defend herself. Or is she, in fact, setting herself up to be, as some people have said, the new face of the Republican Party?
No, I just don't understand. I think there's a certain hypocrisy here. I mean, how many years have we spent saying, look, the way this country is run, you could pick somebody at random out of the Anchorage phone book. And then we did. You know, come on, let's see a little courage of our convictions here. You know, come on.
All right, Aaron, here is your last quote.
Well, I suggested that he would have charmed the information out of her by bedding her first. He was a lover and a giggler.
That is actor Roger Moore being nostalgic about a way a certain character used to be but isn't anymore. What character?
James Bond.
Exactly right. Now, Mr. Moore is entitled to his opinion, having played James Bond in 7 movies, ranging from the classic Live and Let Die to the less classic Octopussy to the really unclassic Bond adventure Take Daily with Food, in which Moore faced down the menace of an enlarged prostate. Apparently, Roger Moore does not like the new Bond, who kills more, quips less. Another problem, of course, is that the title of the new movie, The Quantum of Solace, makes no sense at all. Turns out, this is ironic, I guess, the movie was named in a fan contest that was won by one Sarah Palin of Wasilla, Alaska. Although her winning entry was originally That Quantum of Solace There. So, Carl, how did Aaron do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Aaron had 3 correct answers, so Aaron, you win our prize.
Well done, Aaron.
That's one.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, panel. Time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. And this week, we're starting with a new segment we're calling...
Wait, Wait welcomes our new benevolent overlords.
In which we cover the transition to the Obama O-ministration. Kiri, Obama has already done something to improve the economy by inspiring a new multi-million-dollar business as people are buying, selling, and trading what?
Obama puppies? Memorabilia.
Memorabilia. In fact, yes, Obama souvenirs.
Obamabilia.
Americans, yes.
Obamabilia.
Americans,
I like it.
Yeah. Americans celebrated Obama's historic victory in traditional fashion by buying stuff. People are snapping up millions of dollars worth of T-shirts, buttons, and other Obama merch. Of course, the Obama campaign was not left out of this. For $30, you can have a limited edition victory T-shirt. This is true. It's got a picture of Obama and Biden and the slogan, "The Democratic Party Totally Unprepared to Cope with Victory." Other Obama merchandise includes a line of lovely porcelain Obama figurines, "Change We Can Believe In" diapers, and of course, the popular... This is great. This is going to be a bestseller. The "Tickle Me Biden." you tickle his tummy, and he talks for 6 hours about Scranton. Yeah.
So we just put Obama's face on all these like worthless mortgage securities, and bingo.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. That's great. Step up right up.
Stick Obama's Alrighty. Face on it. You can sell anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Fabian Regosa from Monterey Park, California.
Fabian? Fabian?
Yes, Fabian.
That's it. I mean, like Fabian, like the singer, Fabian?
Yes, I get that a lot. Yes,
that's
I
a
am.
Great name, though.
Yes, it is. That's what my mother named me after that.
Really? Your mother was a big fan of the singer and named you Fabian?
Oh, yeah. I had a big poster on the wall.
Wow. You're probably happy she wasn't a big Engelbert Humperdinck fan.
Oh, yeah, or Simon Garfunkel or something.
That would be bad.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Garfunkel Regosa would be, I think, a name for the books. Well, welcome to our show, Fabian. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Fabian's topic?
Oh, great. Now I've got hamster dance stuck in my head. Thanks, Internet.
The Internet was supposed to change our lives, and it has. Without it, we never would have gotten to know Miss Teen South Carolina, but the Internet is also capable of letting us down. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of the Internet not living up to Al Gore's founding vision. Choose the real story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes.
First, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Google the topic virtual cranial sacral tantric love spree, as the idle and unemployed Lance Deeker did, and you'll find yourself browsing the wares at skullteaser.com. These include a $700 rubber cap with 23 embedded electrodes and a 12-foot USB cable. Users are asked to shave their heads, don the skull cap, then an online craniotherapist manipulates the pressure points to simulate the hours-long tantric sex sessions of New Age legend. The problem, claims Deeker, who subjected himself to a 48-hour marathon session, is not the uncontrollable face twitching or the enduring numbness in his extremities. The problem is that Skull Teaser will not let him do it again. $700 on my mom's credit card and they cut me off because of a little nerve damage. Deeker is planning legal action to have his service, if not his motor skills, reinstated.
A young man heartbroken because SkullTeaser.com won't let him come back. Your next story of the web gone awry comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Anthony Michaels of San Diego has sued the social networking site Classmates.com, charging deceptive advertising practices. When Michaels heard from Classmates.com over and over, email after email, that high school friends were trying to contact him, he upped his membership to the tune of $15, only to find out that no one was looking for him. Not the cute girl from French class, not the stoner poet, not the girl whose history notes he used to copy. Nobody. Instead of being relieved, Michaels is angry. The case may escalate into, no pun intended, a class action suit. The aggrieved group being formerly fat ex-Trekkies who are a lot cooler now and got contacts.
I didn't get contacts. I'm sorry. All right. A guy sues classmates.com because it turns out, despite their promises, nobody from his class really wanted to talk to him. Your last story of internet mayhem comes from PJ O'Rourke.
Ultra-liberal Reed College in Oregon is doing away with textbooks and will rely on the internet for all coursework reading. College President Ellen Dern said the move helps democratize the educational process by utilizing the knowledge and expertise of everyone on Earth via the World Wide Web, while also fighting the unregulated hegemony of textbook publishers. Professors in Reed's math and science departments are furious. Mathematics Department Chairman Maxine Gonzalez said, "I've got students claiming that 2 plus 2 is 220 because they went to Wall Street hedge fund credit swap math sites. I've got other students citing Wikipedia articles saying that 2 plus 2 isn't diverse enough. There should be some 4s and 7s in there." President Dern responded that Reed will continue its experiment and added, "2 plus 2, not having enough diversity, may be a healing concept. Inclusiveness of 4s and 7s could lead to a more healthy and whole society."
All right, then. Here are your choices. From Tom Baudet, a guy upset at the skullteaser.com website because they no longer let him hook up his brain to the computer. From Kerry O'Connor, a guy upset at classmates.com because they lied to him about how popular he was. Or from Pidgey O'Rourke, an entire college getting upset after they allow their students to use the internet for research. Which of these is the real story of the internet letting us down?
I'm probably going to have to say the classmates one because I get a lot of email from them saying I'm popular as well.
Really? but surely, Fabian, you really were.
Oh, that's what my mom keeps telling me.
There you are. All right. So your choice, then, is Kiri's story about classmates.com. Well, we were very pleased to bring you the answer from somebody we think of as a real internet celebrity.
There are a lot of people on classmates.com with similar names, and I'm sure that someone searching for someone with this guy's name clicked through to his profile, and that's why he got told that someone was looking at his profile.
Okay. You know those banner ads for classmates.com that say, "Can you believe that she married him?" That's the she. That's L.A. Smith, who appears in those ads, talking to us about classmates.com. Congratulations, Fabian. You got it right. That's the story that was true about the lawsuit against classmates.com. Well done. You're into point for Kiri. You've won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Well
done. Thank you very much.
Thanks for playing with us today, Fabian.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And now the game where we try to find little gaps in the knowledge of very knowledgeable people. Tom Brokaw is the legendary TV newsman who hosted the NBC Nightly News from 1982 to 2004. He's now the acting host of NBC's flagship interview program, Meet the Press. He's a best-selling author, most recently of Boom, a chronicle of the 1960s. Tom Brokaw, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So excited to have you. Especially after such a major news event like the presidential election. So here's the question. Did you tell Obama what to do, or did Obama tell you guys what to do? We can never figure it out.
Well, Obama got, I think it's fair to say, pretty good attention during the course of this campaign. There's going to be a long postmortem about whether the reporters were fair to him or not. I think in every campaign, there's one candidate who probably gets a little more favorable attention than another.
Right.
He was a phenomenon from almost the beginning, and he attracted a lot of people, and he made very few false steps, so I think that all worked in his favor.
Does it bother you to hear so much criticism of the media, the mainstream media, as it's now called, specifically the criticism that you guys are biased or in the tank or however you want to put it?
No, it's been going on for as long as I can remember. I've been doing this for 45 years now, and back in 1964, there's no one in that audience there, or maybe even on the stage, who will remember this. But it
Carl and I do.
Well, PJ's people at the Goldwater Convention in 1964 were very, very hostile to the press, and that went on for most of the year. And I always remind the conservative critics of the press, I'd say, I don't remember you complaining a lot when we were following Bill Clinton's relationship with Monica moment by moment and tracking what was going on in the impeachment trial. Didn't seem to come up then. My easy answer is that bias like beauty is often in the eye of the beholder. But, of course, there are times when the press will slip over to the left and slip over to the right.
But wait a minute. It's also true, if I may, that in the day, and some people say that you and your colleagues during the 80s and 90s, Mr. Jennings and Mr. Rather, were the last great news anchors, those men who delivered the truth, who were seen as arbiters of what was real and what wasn't the truth. And nowadays it seems like the big names in news are not the truth givers, but the shouting heads, the O'Reillys, the Olbermans, the Matthews, the Buchanans, and so on and so forth. Does that, I mean, has it changed? Has an era passed? Do you ever wish maybe that you had the chance to scream at people and be paid millions of dollars for it?
Listen, if there is an oxymoron in American life, it is humble anchorman. And I'm not going to challenge.
Right.
I'm not going to challenge what you just said about our place. The difference is that the screen is much more crowded now.
Right.
And therefore, to break through, a little more outrage is required. Look, a long time before there was Bill O'Reilly, there was Walter Winchell or Dorothy Kilgallen. This has been a fixed part of American journalism for a long time.
Or Father Coughlin.
Yes, that's true.
Exactly. I want to get back to your network. There was an incident just, I think, last week where your morning anchor, Jeff Scarborough, broke one of the subtle rules of journalism. He dropped the F-bomb on live TV.
He did indeed.
Anything like that ever happened to you?
No, never dropped the F-word. I did talk to him afterwards, and we all agreed that it has become, unfortunately, in common usage.
Yes.
Noun, adverb, personal pronoun.
Yeah.
Conjunction.
I personally,
it's used everywhere, and therefore, if it becomes that kind of, if it's that familiar in your daily use.
Yeah.
It was bound to happen at some point, and he took the kind of no F-bomb pledge after that.
Yeah.
And decided that he wouldn't do it, and we put it on tape delay.
Well, I have to say, as somebody who was listening to it when it happened, it was effing awesome.
Right. Well, the other part of it was that it has become such a fixed part of the life. He didn't realize he'd said it.
Yes. I remember his guests in the show were like going, ooh, 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 ooh. And he was like, what? One more thing, though, about your work. We, of course, talked on our show about your moderation of, I think it was the second presidential debate,
right,
the town hall debate. You got a little, shall we say, concerned about the clock in that debate.
Well, what I got concerned about is that they set up these rules. And what I was trying to do with that debate was to move them away from canned answers. If we're going to go to all that trouble, why just repeat talking points? And so they came up with a 32-page, can you imagine this, a 32-page memo of understanding. But then the people who run the debate said to me, look, you get to ask the questions that you want to afterwards, and they have agreed that they'll only take a minute to respond to them. Well, as soon as they stepped on stage, you know, they tried to run off with the format.
In fact, they got up and they blocked your view of the teleprompter at the end.
They did, and it revealed how hostage we are to that thing. It was my friend Bob Schieffer who was going to do the next debate, and I couldn't remember the date, and I didn't want to get it wrong, so I had to read it off the teleprompter. But there they stood, and for the first time that night, they actually listened to me and moved on.
Yeah, that was nice. Speaking of Schieffer, he was on our show a while ago, and he said something interesting about you. He said you have really nice legs. I'm just...
Schieffer's an old buddy. We've been playing a series of practical jokes on each other, dating to the 1970s when we were both the White House correspondents for during the Ford administration, and it has been an elaborate string, and it's now running into these sunset years of our life, and I just think the world of him. He's one of the authentically great correspondents down there. He's covered every...
Yeah. What about the legs, Tom? What about the legs?
now that you bring it up, all right. When I was a high school basketball player and playing in the state basketball tournament, two of my teammates were named a first team All-State. Another one was named to the All-Tournament team. I was voted as having the best legs by the cheerleaders. So that's my one claim to fame.
That's something. You know?
True story, I'm telling you.
I got to tell you.
Now, listen, I'm just terrified about calling in on this because I am sure that I'm going to finish in the lower percentile of the Sarah Palin scale of current events.
I'm
going to do what I'm going to do.
She has reset the bar.
Right.
And now we're all playing limbo, trying to get under it. All right, here we go. Tom Brokaw, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
The Dorkiest Generation.
Yeah, so you've written a book about the World War II generation. You've written a new book about the generation of the 60s, the boomers. We don't think you're going to be writing one about kids today. They won't even clean up their bedroom, for goodness sake. But we also think that because they have been wasting their time playing.
I'm waiting for a member of this generation to write one that's simply titled My Generation Sucks.
There you are. The problem is we think that these kids these days, kids in their 20s and 30s, are they kids? I don't know. They're wasting their time playing collectible card games. These are the games in which you buy decks of custom cards and play them in combat against your friends. It's like cribbage for kids who can't get dates. So we're going to ask you three questions about such games. Answer two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is Tom Brokaw playing for?
Tom is playing for Lear Blitzstein of Alameda, California.
All right, so you ready to waste some time?
I guess I'm as ready as all over.
Now, here's your first question. Most of these games work in the same model. You engage in combat with your opponents with cards that give you special powers. In the game Ultimate Combat, for example, one of the most feared special powers cards you could play was what? A, body odor, B, nipple twist, or C, intimate tickle?
B.
You're going to go for nipple twist. It's funny, we've practiced this game. Everybody goes right for the nipple twist. But the answer was body odor. If you're in combat, martial arts game, you played
so
body odor.
You can tell where my inclinations are. I'll take nipples over body odor any day.
No, the answer was body odor. If you played that card during combat, your opponent would not be able to play the next turn because presumably they would be stunned. All right. Two more chances. You can still do this. Not all games are quite so violent. Which of these is a game that tries to appeal a little bit to the gentler side of geekdom? A, Swingers, the mate-swapping game. B, a game called Killer Bunnies and the Quest for the Magic Carrot. Or C, Buds and Seeds, in which players compete to grow the best fictional marijuana.
Killer Bunnies.
Killer Bunnies. Killer Bunnies and the Quest for the Magic Carrot. You're right, sir. We haven't ourselves played the game.
It's a lot more fun after you grow the seed.
Yeah. We understand the game does involve bunnies. All right. You're one for two. You get this one right, you will win. Just this year, 2008, a game was released which brought a kind of realism to the collectible card game genre. Is it A, High School, in which players take on the personas of actually popular kids? B, Geek Fight, in which players take on the role of players attending a game convention? Or C, Cubicle Drone, in which players vie for minor promotions and corner offices in an office environment?
B.
You're going to go for a Geek Fight. You seem very confident. Have you played Geek Fight? This is how you and Chris Matthews pass the time? You're right, sir. Geek Fight. How did you know?
And nobody beats Chris Matthews
at Geek Fight.
As Chris Matthews himself might say, I felt a thrill running up my leg. Yeah.
Carl, how did Tom Brokaw do on our quiz?
Well, Tom had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Lear Blitzstein. Congratulations, Tom.
Well done.
Oh, great, Lear.
Tom Brokaw is, of course, a legendary journalist, the former anchor of NBC Nightly News. He is currently the interim moderator of Meet the Press, the author most recently of Boom, Voices of the 60s. Tom Brokaw, thank you so much for being with us. What an honor. Thank you, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, here's a sign that President Obama might not live up to his advance hype. The transition team set up a website called change.gov with a lengthy section detailing the new administration's agenda. But this week, they made a small change to that agenda. What?
They took out the word change.
No. I guess it was sort of a belt-tightening measure. They had to cut something, so. Economic Times.
Can I have a hint?
I just gave you a hint.
Belt-tightening.
Yeah.
Did they add spare to change?
Can you spare any? No.
They're
think of the money they saved on pixels.
They're going to they're not going to do a cyber branch of the government.
No. No. That's not it.
They're not.
Well, they're not.
No. So I'm right.
You were right. You answered another question entirely very well. Congratulations on that.
No, I haven't a clue. The hint didn't help.
No, it didn't help. Does anybody know what happened to their big ambitious agenda that they put on their website?
They deleted it.
They did. It's gone. No more agenda. Instead of the multi-page detailed policy proposals, the change.gov site now under the agenda heading has a brief statement saying, quote, "We find your lack of faith disturbing," unquote. That's it. It's gone. Now, we assume that they decided to take it all down to increase their future flexibility. For example, they once had said that no lobbyists would have any place in their White House. This week, though, they announced that lobbyists are fine as long as they haven't lobbied within the last year in the area on which they'll be working. President-elect Obama has also scaled back his universal health care plan. It's now going to be limited to sending every American 2 aspirin with little O's on them. Kiri, a Japanese company has invented a device that allows fruit lovers to recreate the thrill of performing what simple activity whenever they like.
Fruit lovers?
Fruit lovers!
Fruit lovers. They like to peel bananas.
Yes! Peel bananas. Very good. The dazzling banana provides banana lovers the adrenaline rush that accompanies peeling a banana, but without the burden of having to eat it. It even has a little speaker, so it sounds realistic. Peel, peel, peel. The toy is great for dieting monkeys, kids who are potassium intolerant, and for people who love the thrill of opening their wallets and buying ridiculous crap.
No, I'm in for that. I want
You want a banana peeler?
Well, for my 3-year-old, who's far more interested in peeling bananas than he is in eating them. And
yeah.
So I have these brown bananas laying all over my kitchen.
Well, that's how I get my bananas. I just wait for the kids to want to peel one. And
that's
then I
why
eat
we
it.
Have like 400 pounds of banana bread around.
Exactly.
The four-year-old peels all the bananas.
Right.
You know, and then what do you do?
Well, does this recreate the entire banana peeling experience? I mean, including those icky little strings and, you know,
And then slipping and falling later?
You know, one of the greatest moments of my life was I saw a woman walking down the street slip and fall on a banana.
All right.
No, really?
I did.
That is wicked cool.
Now, if I just see a safe fall on someone's head, I can die happy.
It has to be an Acme safe.
Yeah.
Acme safe. That is so good. I've never seen that.
Tom, marine biologists tracking great white sharks believe they have found the shark equivalent of what?
Taillights.
No. it's breaking! No.
A shark equivalent of...
They found a place that they think for the sharks plays like the same role as what does for humans.
Like disco.
Close. Close. So close. Oh. I'm going to give it to you, in fact. They think it's the shark singles bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what you meant. I knew that's what you meant. Satellite tagging reveals that male and female great whites travel to an isolated spot in the Pacific Ocean every year. Since the area is not a particularly rich feeding ground, the biologists believe it serves as a sort of singles bar for young sharks looking to mate, married sharks maybe looking for a little action on the side. Further investigation confirmed these findings when sharks were overheard saying things like, "If I said you had a beautiful pelvic fin, would you hold it against me?" And, "I've heard of great whites, but you're a fantastic white."
Yeah, that'd be a rough bar just to stumble into, I'll
tell you.
You know, you'd walk in, the sharks would go, "Hey, it's happy hour." They put out a buffet, they'd say. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. And you can find a podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is David Kay from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hey, how are things in Milwaukee?
A little cold, but not too bad.
Not too bad. What do you do there?
I work for the Medical College of Wisconsin in patient registration.
The Medical College of Wisconsin?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was one.
There is. It's not particularly exciting, but it pays my bills.
There you go. That's terrific. That's good to hear. Well, welcome to the show, David. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle, once again. We'll read three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will, of course, record the greeting in your home, answering device, whatever it may be. Ready to go?
Absolutely.
Here's your first quote.
I may not understand everything, but I do understand common sense. And when you lend money to someone, you don't want to see them at a new car dealer the next day.
That was a man named Ken Carlson. He was talking to Bloomberg.com. He was just one of several people steamed by news that year-end bonuses will still be given out by companies involved with what?
With the banking industry and the bailout.
The bailout, yes. Good news, Wall Street employees, despite the tanking economy and your poor performance, you're all still getting your annual bonuses. That news did not sit so well with shareholders, one of whom told Bloomberg, quote, taking a bonus this year is kind of like being in the Titanic and trying to jump in the lifeboats before the women and children, unquote. More bailout news. Secretary of the Treasury Paulson announced he had decided that instead of using the money to buy bad mortgages, as had been planned, instead he was going to use the $700 billion to buy stock in troubled companies. Okay, great.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
I did that already. I am so ahead of Paulson on this.
You're a true patriot.
Yeah.
Of course, if that doesn't work, he's just going to buy $700 billion scratch-off lottery tickets and hope to get lucky.
Is anybody else mystified by this whole thing?
I think everybody else is mystified by the whole thing.
Because I got like Joe Jerk down the road. He's got all these cars up on blocks in the front yard. He falls behind in his mortgage payments, and the economy of Iceland explodes.
Yes.
I am missing a couple pieces of this.
Yeah, you thought he was just some schmuck down the road.
Yeah.
Well, you know that moment in It's a Wonderful Life? Where Jimmy Stewart says, well, your money's in Bob's house and in John's house and in Fred's house. You know that moment?
Yeah.
Well, now it's like, well, and you're screwed, and you're screwed, and you're screwed. And Fred over there, he's royally screwed. It's the same thing, only in reverse. All right. Here's your next quote.
Minnesota Nice will be the greatest casualty of this recount. It's going to get ugly. It's going to get expensive.
That was Cook political report analyst Jennifer Duffy describing what potentially ugly event happening in Minnesota.
The recount on the Senate race.
Exactly, the Coleman-Franken recount. Incumbent Republican Senator Norm Coleman's lead over comedian Democrat Al Franken has been shrinking since Election Day down to a couple of hundred votes. So now, of course, hundreds of lawyers are involved. They're parachuting in. It looks like the recount could drag out until December. That's a scary thought. Look up! The skies are black with lawyers!
Those are paralegals.
People are wondering why the good people of Minnesota... People are wondering why the good people of Minnesota, who seemed so certain in their presidential choice, couldn't make up their mind between Coleman and Franken. Analysts say it's because both candidates had a near-fatal flaw, being either Norm Coleman or Al Franken. All right, here is your last quote.
I've had one of these presidencies where I had to make some tough calls.
That was someone telling CNN that his presidency was different from other less complicated presidencies. Who?
That would be the lame duck George W. Bush.
Yes. President Bush is the only guy who can make it sound like going for a full term was more like a pregnancy than a presidency. In an interview this week with CNN, the president told Heidi Collins that he's just had, quote, one of those presidencies. As if we could just say, you know, oh, yeah, one of those, and remember back to our own presidencies, and we'd nod and say, yeah, sometimes stuff happens, doesn't it? Bush also told Collins that he will probably write a book about his experiences in the White House. Quote, it's going to take a lot of thought and a lot of work to get it out, and it will be an interesting project, unquote. Sadly, the best title is already taken. A series of unfortunate events. Carl, how did David do in our quiz?
Very well, Peter. Three correct answers. So, David, you win our prize.
Well done.
Thank
Congratulations.
You. Thanks.
Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Kerry O'Connor has the lead. Peter, she has 4 points. P.J. O'Rourke has 2. Tom Beaudet has 1.
Okay. Tom, you are up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. On Thursday, the Labor Department reported that blank rates were the highest they've been in 7 years.
Unemployment.
Right. President-elect Obama told Democratic Party leaders this week that he supports keeping blank in the Democratic caucus.
Senator Lieberman.
Right. Howard Dean announced that he would not seek a second term as chairman of the blank.
The Democratic Party Committee.
Democratic National Committee. Yeah. A Ukrainian woman was uninjured when she fell from her 9th-floor apartment and landed in blank.
A dumpster.
A giant vat filled with grapes. Oh. Tony Dow, best known as Wally Cleaver in the old Leave It to Beaver TV series, will have one of his abstract sculptures on display at blank.
The Getty?
No, the Louvre in Paris. A German woman who called police after finding her home destroyed apologized when she realized blank.
She, in fact, had destroyed it herself.
No, it had been ransacked by her daughter, who had just been trying to find her bikini.
Oh, these kids today.
Policemen arrived at the house, said, quote, it looked like a classic break-in when we arrived. Ornaments had been broken, drawers emptied, furniture upended. It was chaos. Police were trying to determine how the thief had gained entry when the woman's 16-year-old daughter arrived home and confessed that she had just couldn't find her bikini. Said the teen, quote, I admit I am a bit untidy. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 3 correct answers. Ooh. For 6 more points. He now has 7 points and a slight lead.
Oh, that won't last.
No. All right, PJ, you are up next. Please fill in the blank. Now that he's gotten a new job, blank says he'll resign his Senate seat effective on Sunday.
New job, Senate seat effective on Sunday. Oh, God, I wish it were all of them. But I think that is, no, I'm pulling a blank. I'm sorry.
How about next. Barack Obama?
I've heard of him.
Federal safety inspectors said that, quote, serious design errors led to a collapse of a blank in Minneapolis last year.
Bridge.
Right. A week after it announced store closures, electronic giant blank filed for bankruptcy.
Circuit City.
Right. Environmentalists were disappointed by the Supreme Court's decision to lift restrictions on the Navy's use of blank.
Atomic power?
No, sonar. Oh, a flock sonar. Of birds in Florida caused a power outage after they were understandably scared by a blank.
Obama administration.
No. By a singing Hannah Montana balloon. On Wednesday, U.S. officials condemned blank for test firing a new generation of long-range surface-to-surface missiles.
Iran.
Right. After the death of anti-apartheid singer Miriam Makeba, the government of blank declared an official period of mourning.
South Africa.
Right. A Georgia man who accidentally set fire to his house realized too late that it was a bad idea to clean out cobwebs with a blank.
Flamethrower.
Close enough. A blowtorch. Yes. Galen Winchell had become had some messy, cobwebby eaves, and he had a blowtorch. What would you do?
Oh, really? God.
A police spokesman said the fire was contained to one part of the house. A spider spokesman said he and his family were moving into a house where the owner wasn't frickin' nuts. Carl, how did PJ do?
PJ had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and PJ has taken the lead.
All right, then.
That won't last.
No. All right, so how many, then, does Kerry need to win this thing?
4 to tie, 5 to win outright.
All right, here we go, then. Kerry,
it's a low bar, but
this is for the game.
Limbo under it.
Fill in the blank, after a 4-year battle came to an end, blank couples in Connecticut began getting married.
Okay.
Right. This week, Michelle Obama called blank for advice on raising children in the White House.
Laura Bush.
No, Hillary Clinton. Florida Republican blank spoke out about the Page scandal that forced his resignation 2 years ago.
Foley.
Right, Mark Foley. This week, Senator Obama said that during his presidency, he will ratchet up the hunt for blank.
Bin Laden.
Right, a 2-year-old toddler in Colorado who was choking on a Pop-Tart was rescued by the quick actions of blank.
Oh, the family dog.
A parrot named Willie. When asked by Vogue about the breakup of her marriage, Jennifer Aniston told the magazine that, quote, what blank did was very uncool.
Angelina Jolie.
Right. A woman in Ohio had filed a lawsuit against Victoria's Secret claiming that some of their bras contained blank.
just a thought.
metal.
No, what? Formaldehyde. An elementary school guessing game over what a student had brought in for show and tell ended quickly when teachers realized the student had brought in a blank.
Sex manual.
No, a hand grenade. This is great, and as a father of small children, I think it is particularly great. At Cyberling Elementary in Akron, Ohio, students bring in a secret item for show and tell, and they give clues as to what it is. So this kindergartner's first clue was, it blows things up. Teacher decided to see what it was, checked, sure, yes, it's a hand grenade. They evacuate the school instantly. They find out, of course, it's just a dummy hand grenade. No problem. Let everybody back in. However, the next kid, show and tell, his first clue was, this makes you really, really, really sick. Carl, did Carrie do well enough to win?
Well, she needed four to tie, and she had four correct answers.
Whoa!
With 12 points, Carrie O'Connor and P.J. O'Rourke are tied for first place. They're this week's co-champ.
Whoa, this was...
this week's biggest loser bad. Down here.
This was amazing. This was...
So there's only one loser to this week, you're saying.
Yeah. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the first sentence of President Bush's forthcoming memoir. But first, let me tell you, the support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrusts.org. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. B.J. Littiman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer. Produced by Emily Ekton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the first sentence of President Bush's memoir? P.J. O'Rourke.
It were a dark and stormy night.
Kerry O'Connor.
Dick Cheney awoke one morning from uneasy dreams to find he had turned into a giant cockroach, and we said, go with that look.
And Tom Baudette.
I've seen the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving, hysterical, wolfy, dick, rummy, best posse a president could have.
Well, if President Bush writes any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Kerry O'Connor, P.J. O'Rourke, and Tom Baudette. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.